cry. Mama's gonna check out all your girlfriends for you. Mama won't let anyone dirty get through. Mama's gonna wait up until you get in. Mama will always find out where you've been. Mama's gonna keep baby healthy and clean. Ooh, baby. Mother didn't need to be so high.
I'd like to introduce my daughters, Zena Gray.
Creation for all mothers. This is a kind of description of how we come into the world and how Alex Gray was created. Previously played, but thoroughly
we
enjoyed.
We incarnate. And our body grows. And our consciousness evolves from childhood. Magical myths and fantasies to adult realities. And each one of us is a totally unique expression of universal creativity. We're each a form of God's art. In a cosmos of billions of galaxies, and in a galaxy of billions of stars, there's a planet with billions of people, the only one we know of. And every breath we breathe is a miracle. Our hearts pump, we see. We hear, we taste, we touch our world, and sometimes we forget the pure wonder of our brief journey on Earth. But there are moments when we see behind the opaque curtain of life. When the Infinite One shines through the skin of the Beloved. And we see the game that we're in, the journey that we're on, the beautiful and powerful beings that we are. We get in touch with the truth that's worth living for. Every moment of time is an opportunity to reclaim our timeless essence. And every moment is an opportunity to realize that we're all reflections of the divine. Beyond nationality, race, age, gender, on our path of life. We each go through suffering and joy. Each one of us learns life lessons, private and ones to share. And each of us has family and friends. We need to let them know how much we love them. For all too soon, we die. Our consciousness leaves our body, and our soul journeys into the great mystery.
This is Fane of the Cosmos, and that was Alex Gray. From an amazing, amazing CD called World Spirit, which includes a DVD aspect and a CD. I haven't actually had a chance to view the CD yet, but I will soon. Now, for any of you out there who are interested in psychedelics, entheogenics, entheobotany, shamanism, there is a conference gathering, Call of the Tribes, this 21st of May to the 23rd of May. It's called Entheogenesis 2. And the theme is From Darkness Back to Light. The theme From Darkness Back to Light has a focus on the use of entheogens from the time of the Dark Ages, when these substances were widely suppressed and were limited to occult use, following up to our modern age of information when the entheogens returned to their former popularity. Some of the speakers include Carl Ruck, Dr. Michael Aldridge, Professor Susan Boyd, who we've had on the show, Professor Francis Thackeray, Michael Horowitz, Martin A. Lee, Chris Bennett, Alan Piper, Reverend DeMuzzi, you got it, Kenneth Tupper, Phil Lucas, David Malmo-Levine, and Roman Falangra. This is an amazing opportunity for people who are interested in psychedelics and shamanism and entheogens to come and pool resources, spirit, mind. I went last year and it was an amazing, amazing event. The speakers are amazing, but the group of people who come to listen and with their own insights and knowledge and wisdom that is shared, the group mind that happens is stellar. Mark Emery is an excellent host. I've criticized him in the past and kind of, you know, sometimes been down on him for some things, but I will say this, and I will say this true, that he is one of the best hosts ever. I couldn't believe it. He served me food and like poured me water and was like a total awesome host, giving, generous, helpful, just a really, really nice time. And this year it's taking place at the Simon Fraser University. It's going to be held at the Morris J. Wask Center for Dialogue, which is an amazing meeting space. And for any people who were kind of like in the spring pinch, tickets start at $250, but in a recent news flash from the organizer of the event, Chris Bennett, he said tickets are now $99. So if you want tickets to Entheogenesis, you can get them at Holy Smoke. $99 for 3 days of amazing, amazing information. I can't believe it. I mean, that's half the price of last year, and it's better this year. So if you have, it's May long weekend, so it's like you can, for $99, you can't really lose. I'm amazed. So if you're interested in those kinds of subjects, come by the Holy Smoke. We have tickets, $99. I can't recommend it enough, just because my experience last year, it was just amazing, including artwork, musicians, the treats, the knowledge, the everything. Yeah. Totally stellar. It gets my Fane of the Cosmos, five leaf rating. So get in there. Some of the, I have the schedule here, so you can just take a look here. On Saturday, it's the registration. Here's just some of the names of the different, some of the subjects of the talks that are going to be given. Cannabis and Creative Cryptic Writing with Special References to Shakespeare, Witch Hunts and the War on Weed, A Walk on the Wild Side, Fantasticants, Fascism and Phenomology, From Witches to Crack Moms, Ayahuasca and the Internet, A Postmodern Convergence of Cultural Tools, The Importance of Drugs and Literature, Forbidden Knowledge, The Renaissance of Medical Cannabis Research in the 21st Century. That's with Phil Lucas from the Vancouver Island Compassion Society. Dr. Michael Aldridge, this will be a good one. Religious and Medical Uses of Cannabis in Ancient India, Asia, Middle East, and Africa. Wow, this is a good one too. The Lot Tree of the Furthest Boundary, Psychoactive Sacraments in Islamic Gnosis, and Carl Ruck and Professor Blaise Staples, they're going to be talking about Melusina of Plain Coral, Evidence of the Cathar's Use of Psychoactive Mushrooms. So those are just some of the topics that will be at the Entheogenesis 2 conference. So get in there. I mean, it's kind of, you know, yeah, what's he doing? He's pumping up this stuff, you know. But I can, honestly, it's an experience that you shouldn't really miss, an event that you really shouldn't miss. Now, in an unusual case here, we were covering Dakine Cafe. They were in Vancouver. They were the cafe that was selling herb downtown. They got pinched. One of the owners is now in jail. So this is from the Vancouver Sun. Don Breyer, the 54-year-old behind the Dakine Cafe, Commercial Drive's infamous pot den, is giggling with excitement at making history. Yeah, he made history. He made her story. The first federal inmate to run for a seat in a BC election. From time to time, politicians end up behind bars. They rarely begin their careers there. Incarcerated in the Pacific Institution Matsqui Complex in Abbotsford, that was the one where they wouldn't let me into the jail. I went to go there to see their play, and the dogs smelt my fingers and they wouldn't let me into the jail facility. Sorry, that's my Matsqui story. I couldn't believe it. Like, I just couldn't believe it. I didn't have anything, hadn't smoked anything, but the dog smelled me and was like, man, his pits smell like skunk weed, and we're not letting him in, and so they didn't let me in. But anyway, as one of BC's biggest marijuana dealers and awaiting trial on pot possession charges over his role last summer, Dakine Breyer this week launched his bid as a marijuana party candidate in Surrey Tynehead, hoping to unseat Liberal incumbent Dave Hare. The guys in here love it, he said gleefully. Blue eyes sparkle. His hair dyed the color of wheat. This is the first time it's happened. I've been campaigning in here and lots of guys are going to vote for me. This is a democracy. We do have free speech, and the staff here have been great. In 2002, the Supreme Court of Canada struck down the law that stripped the right to vote from inmates sentenced for serious offenses, and there is now no law precluding prisoners from running in an election, provided they meet the nominal nomination criteria. The High Court said such a measure could not reasonably be justified in a free and democratic society, so the BC Elections Act was subsequently amended so inmates can vote this time around. Since then, a paranoid, schizophrenic man incarcerated in an Ontario hospital for the criminally insane ran in that province's 2003 election, and in Nova Scotia, another marijuana party candidate serving jail time for pot offenses ran unsuccessfully for a provincial seat in 2003. His incarceration, Breyer concedes, puts a bit of a crimp in his campaign, but it hasn't doused his enthusiasm. Vote me in to get me out. That should be my slogan, he quipped. That and tax the weed. Breyer, who was marking his 236th day in the Hooskow Thursday, said he felt forced into politics to change what he considered an unjust law. I'm a victim of the war on marijuana and Ottawa's failed criminal prohibition. We should be taxing marijuana. We are wasting scarce law enforcement resources locking up gardeners while leaving billions on the table in uncollected tax revenue. It makes no sense, he said. Breyer ran in the last provincial campaign and got only 2% of the vote in the same riding, coming fifth out of seventh on the eve of going to jail to begin serving a 4-year sentence of trafficking, weapons offenses, and money laundering. Out on parole last year, he and his partner Carol Gwilt opened a Kind Cafe for marijuana customers. After being open for several months, the popular pot shop was raided by the police. Gwilt, who is free on bail while awaiting trial on charges as a result of her involvement, is also running as a marijuana party candidate in the Maple Ridge Mission riding. Breyer said Gwilt and other friends are running his campaign outside of the prison, putting up signs, phoning voters, attending candidates' meetings when possible. And marijuana party leader Mark Emery was especially high about his candidacy. This man should be out in the community educating people about the benefits of a non-criminal regulatory approach to marijuana, not rotting in a jail cell on the taxpayer's dime, he said. Breyer insisted he isn't a one-issue candidate. Tuition fees are too high and they've closed too many schools, he said, launching off into a riff about education policy. And don't get him started on BC Ferries, BC Rail, the economy, or healthcare. Why are we laying off healthcare workers and hiring more cops, he says, before delivering another set piece speech. Still, there's no chance he'll be able Yeah, this reporter's got it kind of messed up. Still, there's no chance he'll be elected May 17th, but he's hoping he might get parole again. His hearing is set for the morning after the polls close. I never like writers who just, you know, he'll never be voted in. You just never know. I've seen it happen where people have been voted in while they're in jail. So, don't get down on people who are trying to make change. This is Martin Luther King, and it's just what I just can't believe about this talk is that okay, here I gotta turn this down. I gotta switch CDs because, man, this one CD player just does not like it when you make your own CDs and try and get it rolling. So, here we go. This is Martin Luther King. And he's talking about Vietnam. And what is really amazing is that it totally applies to Iraq. It totally applies to what we're going through overseas in American foreign policy. So, yeah. Just gotta get this dialed up. This thing got me confused now. Switching CDs around mid-show. Here we go. This is Martin Luther King.
And as I ponder the madness of Vietnam and search within myself for ways to understand and respond in compassion, my mind goes constantly to the people of that peninsula. I speak not now of the soldiers of each side, not of the military government in Saigon, but simply of the people who have been under the curse of war for almost three continuous decades now. I think of them too because it is clear to me that there will be no meaningful solution until some attempt is made to know these people and hear their broken cry. Now let me tell you the truth about it. They must see Americans as strange liberators. Do you realize that the Vietnamese people proclaimed their own independence in 1945 after a combined French and Japanese occupation? And incidentally, this was before the Communist Revolution in China. They were led by Ho Chi Minh. And this is a little known fact. These people declared themselves independent in 1945. They quoted our Declaration of Independence in their document of freedom. Yet our government refused to recognize them. President Truman said they were not ready for independence. So we fell victim as a nation at that time of the same deadly arrogance that has poisoned the international situation for all of these years. France then set out to reconquer its former colony. And they fought eight long, hard, brutal years trying to reconquer Vietnam. You know who helped France? It was the United States of America. Came to the point that we were meeting more than 80% of the war costs. And even when France started despairing of its reckless action, we did not. In 1954, a conference was called at Geneva, and an agreement was reached because France had been defeated at Dien Bien Phu. But even after that, and even after the Geneva Accord, we did not stop. We must face the sad fact that our government sought real sense to sabotage the Geneva Accord. Well, after the French were defeated, it looked as if independence and land reform would come through the Geneva Agreement. But instead, the United States came and started supporting a man named D.M., who turned out to be one of the most ruthless dictators in the history of the world. He set out to silence all opposition. People were brutally murdered merely because they raised their voices against the brutal policies of Diem. And the peasants watched and cringed as Diem ruthlessly rooted out all opposition. Peasants watched as all this was presided over by United States influence and then by increasing numbers of United States troops who came to help quell the insurgency that Diem's methods had aroused. When Diem was overthrown, they may have been happy, but the long line of military dictatorship seemed to offer no real change, especially in terms of their need for land and peace. And who are we supporting in Vietnam today? It's a man by the name of General Key, who fought with the French against his own people, and who said on one occasion that the greatest hero of his life is Hitler. This is who we are supporting in Vietnam today. Oh, our government and the press generally won't tell us these things, but God told me to tell you this morning. The truth must be told.
A poignant talk from Martin Luther King. Totally, totally poignant for the whole war in Iraq. How we support brutal dictators rather than populist movements among the people. Now, it's Mother's Day, and so I have some... some quotes that I found that I thought were super stella. This is from Wade Davis, One River. And I'll just read from the book. When Gerardo Reichel Dolmatov first went into the mountains, the Kogi told him a... Kogi told him a story about the birth of the world. In the beginning, they explained, all was darkness and water. There was no land, no sun or moon, and nothing alive. The water was the Great Mother. She was the mind within nature, the fountain of all possibilities. She was life becoming, emptiness, pure thought. She took many forms. As a maiden, she sat on a black stone at the bottom of the sea. As a serpent, she encircled the world. She was the daughter of the Lord of Thunder, the Spider Woman, whose web embraced the heavens. As Mother of Ice, she dwelt in a black lagoon in the High Sierra. As Mother of Fire, she dwells by every hearth. At the first dawning, the Great Mother began to spin her thoughts. In her serpent form, she placed an egg into the void, and the egg became the universe. The universe was to have 9 layers, 4 of the netherworld and 4 of the upper world, with the plane of contact being the 5th, the central world of human beings. The 4 netherworlds were created first, then the 4 upper worlds, each resplendent with the light of its own sun. The 5th layer, the plane that links the upper and lower halves of the universe, is Sun-Earth, Night-Earth. The land of human beings, the junction between the cosmic realms. When the Great Mother conceived the 9-layer universe, she fertilized herself by anointing one of her pubic hairs with her menstrual blood, and then by impregnating herself with a phallic lime stick. She gave birth to Sintana, a black-faced jaguar, a prototypic human being. Then Satana placed one of his mother's pubic hairs, a sliver of her fingernail, and a necklace of red stones on his mother's navel. With his coca stick, he pushed them into her body, and thus she became pregnant with the lords of the universe, the 4 cardinal points, the zenith, nadir, and center. The lord of the zenith is the sun. The lord of the nadir is the black sun, older brother of our sun. As soon as our sun sets below the horizon, this lord of darkness appears, a black sun that shivers like a darkling moon. At the first dawning, the universe was still soft. The Great Mother stabilized it by thrusting her enormous spindle into the center, penetrating the 9 layers of the world axis. The lords of the universe, born of the Great Mother, pushed back the sea and lifted up the Sierra Nevada around the world axis, thrusting her pubic hairs into the soil to give it strength. Then the Great Mother placed potsherds on the surface, and from her spindle uncoiled a length of cotton thread, with which she traced a circle around the mountains, circumscribing the Sierra Nevada, which she declared to be the land of her children. Thus the spindle became a model of the cosmos. The disk is the earth. The whorl of yarn is the territory of the people. The individual strands of spun cotton are the thoughts of the sun. The white cone of yarn represents the four layers of the upper world, but below the disk, the cotton is black and invisible. The sun is moving around the earth, and it spins the yarn of life and gathers it about the axis of the cosmos, the mountains of the Sierra Nevada, the homeland of the Great Mother. Okay, now, if you've ever done any weaving, or actually if you've ever heard me talk, I always say this quote, "I'll see you in the tangle of it all." And the tangle to me is like this loom of threads of experience in our lives and how we get all woven together and how the world weaves in and out of our lives. And those different threads are different people, different places, different experiences, the tendrils of our consciousness that wind around. And so the loom and threads and tangles of threads is my kind of like visual archetype for life. And so if I say I see you in the tangle, I'm thinking of a knot of threads that is all of our lives and how it all weaves together. Now, this is also from One River by Wade Davis, and I just love what he talks about the loom. "Everything begins and ends with the loom," Tim said, reaching into the fire for an ember to light a cigarette. He moved over toward the door. "For the Kogi, a person's thoughts are like threads. The act of spinning is the act of thinking. The cloth they weave and the cloths they wear become their thoughts. Listen to this," he said. He opened his notebook and began to read. "I shall weave the fabric of my life. I shall weave it white as a cloud. I shall weave some black into it. I shall weave dark maize stalks into it. I shall weave maize stalks into the white cloth. Thus I shall obey the divine law." "It's a Kogi prayer," Tim said. "I found it in one of Reichel's papers. You see, to us, the loom is just a few poles, a simple piece of technology. But for these Indians, it's something sacred. Not the object, but the act of weaving itself, or at least the symbols that it invokes. In the simple act of making cloth, the weaver aligns themselves with the forces of creation." According to Reichel Dolmatov, Tim explained, "the loom is an image of the four corners of the world, with the point of intersection of the cross poles representing the sacred peaks of the Sierra Nevada. The loom is also the human body, with the four corners representing the shoulders and hips, and the intersection of the poles being the human heart. Thus, when a man crosses his arms, hands touching opposite shoulders, he embraces himself and becomes the loom of life. The earth itself, the surface of the land, is also a loom, an immense template on which the sun weaves the fabric of existence. In the four corners are the points of the solstices and equinoxes. The loci between the divine weaver moves each day and night, creating the worlds of light and darkness, of life and death. This idea of the sacred infusing of the material world informs every aspect of the life in the Sierra. When the Great Mother conceived the nine-layered universe, she also dreamed into being the first temple, egg-shaped like the cosmos. The temple floor is the world of the living, the thatch roof a model of the upper worlds, mirrored beneath the ground by an inverted realm like that of the cosmos. To this day, the Koji build their temples around this cosmic model. They're simple structures with high conical roofs supported by four corner posts. On the dirt floors, positioned between the central axis of the temple and each of the four posts, is a ceremonial hearth representing one of the four lineages found at the beginning of the time of the Lords of the Universe. In the middle is the hearth of Lord... Oh man, here we go. Lord Mulkix, the representative of the sun. When the Koji build their temples, the alignment of these hearths is precise and critical. At the apex of the roof is a small hole, covered most of the year by a piece of pottery. The orientation of the temple is such that on the morning solstice, as the sun rises, on the summer solstice, as the sun rises above the mountains in the morning, a narrow beam of sunlight falls on the hearth that lies in the southwest corner of the temple. During the day, as the sun moves across the sky, the beam of light moves across the floor until just before the dusk, it lands on the hearth in the southeast corner. 6 months later, on the winter solstice, with the sun having shifted south, the beam of the light passing through the roof touches the northwest corner hearth in the morning, and in a similar fashion passes over the floor during the day, striking the northeast hearth at dusk. On both the fall and spring equinoxes, the beam of light passes through the roof and slices a path equidistant between the north and south, such that at the meridian point, with the sun high in the sky, the central hearth, the most sacred of the five, is bathed in a thin vertical column of light. For that moment, a mama or priest has been waiting. He lifts a mirror to the sun, and as the light of the father fertilizes the womb of the living, the priest with his mirror creates a cosmic axis along which prayers of the people may ascend to the heavens. Thus, over the course of a long year, the sun passes over the earth and weaves the lines of the living on the loom of the temple floor. He weaves by day and night in this world and during the hours of darkness in the world that lies below, the inverted realm of the black sun. Above and below, the sun weaves two pieces of cloth each year, one for himself and one for his wife. The first strands of the warp are laid down on the solstice. The first cloth is completed on the equinox. At that time, according to Reichel Dolmatov, the Kogi priests begin to dance at the eastern door of the temple, moving slowly across to the western entrance, all the while in gesture and song, acting as if they were drawing a rod between them. Finally, reaching the western door, the priest pulls forth the imaginary rod, and the fabric of the sun unfolds to the north and south. Within moments, a new cloth is conceived. The divine weaver soars over the loom, and life continues.
Your voice to make an object. And as I understood, I felt a bubble kind of grow inside of me. And I watched these little elf types jumping in and out of my chest. They like to do that to reassure you. And they said, do it. And I felt language rise up in me that was unhooked from English. And I began to speak like this. Мой фуау хуап сики пипит и дэджи гиме вахуа бэгэн гито и пуа фэпси дэме джи гинги то и ва аган ты хуя дэхинэнч ве муа хагбэхэ дунжики бэха гонг тэпио ой дэг Но мехеттики петуинен. Or words to that effect. And I wondered then what it all meant and why it felt so good if it didn't mean anything. And I thought about it a few years, actually. And I decided, you know, that meaning and language are two different things. And that what the alien voice in the psychedelic experience wants to reveal is the syntactical nature of reality. That the real secret of magic is that the world is made of words, and that if you know the words that the world is made of, you can make of it whatever you wish. Gebeko kingi toy yes teach me the hego flekek ze moa hagaba hego vi tuch me gebe higi nun ek kep si di vo mawa wa haya ba da hek lo de be gonge puata ze moa hagwap siki pipin And one of the things that I learned about DMT was that if you've ever had it, even just once, then you can have a dream. And in this dream, somebody will pull out a little glass pipe. And then it will happen. It will happen just like the real thing, because there's a button somewhere inside each and every one of us that gives you a look into the other side, and that's the button that resets the compass that tells you where you want to sail. Good luck.
Listening to CUNY Co-op Radio 93.5 FM, CJLY, broadcasting live from Nelson. Beautiful, beautiful Nelson. And over the World Wide Web, the World Wide Weave, at www.cunycoopradio.com and Kootenai Lake on 96.5 FM. 96.5 FM. Now, today's show is dedicated to all mothers and grandmothers and great-grandmothers. And, yeah, beautiful, beautiful mothers. Thank you for all that you give and nourish and provide. Now, on that theme, I'm going to play a tune from the Be Good Tanya CD, which I can't actually remember what the, I can't remember actually the song, but anyway, it's called Mom Song, so we'll play that. Stay tuned.
Didn't I love you?
goodness, what a beauty, beauty song. That's from the Be Good Tanyas, from their album Blue Horse. And if you don't know, the Be Good Tanyas had some of their germinal roots here in the Coots. So we're blessed all around. Now, I don't know if it's every season, but we have a membership drive, and I always like to kick things off with this song because it's by Sugar Ray and it's called Cash. And that's what this radio station needs to keep going. It needs memberships, and it's late enough that I can play this song, and I just think it's perfect. That Sugar Ray, I think that's so perfect. Cash. I need some cash. But anyway, get your memberships if you don't have one. This zoo doesn't go on without pledges from you, so get in there. This has been a Mother's Day show for Fane of the Cosmos. I've been your host, Dustin Sunflower. Always great to be on the dial here and be in this wonderful community and have this wonderful radio station to be there. This show has now been running for 4 years thereabouts. We couldn't keep going without you, the listener, having memberships, buying goodies from our sponsors, and being generally good folks. So blessings out to all you listeners who have memberships, and if you don't get one, there are rates for different folks. If you're low income, it's $25. Regular is $40. For a family, $75. Organization, $100. And lifetime is $500. So we're kicking off the membership drive. We're getting it in under the hour. Again, this has been Fan of the Cosmos. Infinite Moment. I'm your host, Dustin Sunflower. Have a wonderful night. Love you, and all mothers, we love you so much.